You tuned in to the Kojo Namdi Show on WAMU 88.5. Welcome. The local news business has had a tumultuous few decades as the internet upended the traditional print advertising industry. In our region, we've lost the Gazette and current newspapers in print and digital outlets like Borderstan and DCS, just to name a few. But Facebook recently announced that it will show users more local news. We're also seeing hyper-local startups and nonprofits pop up around the country. Could a brighter future be on the horizon for journalism in the D.C. region? Joining me in studio is Jan Schaefer. She is the executive director of JLab, the Institute for Interactive Journalism, and an adjunct professor of entrepreneurial journalism at American University and of social journalism at CUNY, at the CUNY Graduate School of Journalism. Jan Schaefer, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Also with us in studio is Scott Broadbeck. He is the founder and CEO of Local News Now, which operates ARL Now and Reston Now. He also sits on the board of directors for the Local Independent Online News Publishers Association. Scott, thank you for joining us.
Good afternoon.
And Josh Kurtz is the co-founder and editor of Maryland Matters, a nonprofit news site that covers the state's government and politics. Josh, thank you.
Thank you, Kojo.
Again, we'd like you to join this conversation, 800-433-8850. Jan, how has the local media landscape shifted in the past decade or two in the D.C. region? What have we lost, and what are some of the causes of the decline?
Well, we've lost a lot. We've lost, as you mentioned, both Gazette and Current. We've lost the Montgomery County Journals. It also had a Virginia, Northern Virginia, DCist and Borderstan. We've lost kind of who to vote for. How do you know if your officials are doing their jobs well? The Post really can't cover two states and the District of Columbia at that micro level to really help citizens know what's going on at their local level.
Regrettably, DCS loss has been our gain because we got Rachel Sedone from DCS, who's now working with us. Local journalism has taken some huge hits, but we're also seeing some interesting new ventures crop up. What are you seeing in terms of innovation here in our region?
Well, writ large, there are a lot of hyper-local news startups going on around the country, maybe less so in our region than elsewhere. We're seeing two kinds, mostly for-profit hyper-local startups and nonprofit statewide startups that are covering state capitals, much like Josh's Maryland Matters story. And then we're also seeing niche sites that cover statewide education or citywide education. The Philadelphia School Notebook, for example, health sites in Connecticut and North Carolina. So kind of the local ecosystem for media is really made up of smaller and smaller operations providing news.
And both Scott and Josh represents different tendencies in the trends that you're talking about.
Very much.
Scott, you run two successful for-profit sites in Virginia. Tell us a little bit about that business model and what's worked for you.
So, Kojo, we've been in business for 8 years now. We were founded January 2010, and we're still around and kicking. Our business is not just providing and reporting local news. It's selling local advertising. And a lot of what's happening in local news, a lot of the challenge is a business challenge. So, papers are seeing reductions in their circulation, but more so they're seeing reductions in local businesses advertising with them. With the advent of the internet, with social networks, local advertisers have more options for places they can advertise. And as a result, newspapers do not have the same sort of stranglehold on getting a message out to the community that they once had. Now, what we've been doing is we've been focused on reporting on these very specific communities in Arlington and Reston and amassing a large audience. And then there's value in local advertisers and reaching that audience. And so that's what we're doing. But we're doing it on a smaller scale than you might have seen if we were a print publication a couple decades ago. We have grown. We have three going on four full-time employees in addition to myself in our office in Clarendon. But it remains a challenge, and we really need to do things very well, both on the reporting side to get the audience and on the advertising side to provide value to local businesses with the advertising you're selling. And I also wanted to mention that in addition to the two sites that we run, we also sell advertising on two other sites, Popville, which covers community news in the district, and now Run Washington, which is a publication that covers running in the D.C. area writ large.
Josh, you launched the nonprofit Maryland Matters a little less than a year ago. How is that going?
Depends on the day you ask me that question. But in general, I think it's going pretty well. We've been raising money. We've actually got two full-time reporters working for us now since the beginning of January, which is a sign of progress. There's a lot of interest in what we write about, given that the General Assembly is in session in Annapolis right now, given that this is an election year. So people are paying attention. People are reading us. People are interested. We're growing.
You got a couple of reporters.
So I don't know if we're sort of growing fast enough or if we're, where this is going, but, I feel good about where we are right now.
800-433-8850. What do you think of Facebook's decision to promote more local news in your feed? Have you started seeing the results of that? 800-433-8850. Here is Christine on the Eastern Shore in Maryland. Christine, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to comment. We moved to the Eastern Shore from New York a couple of years ago, and one of the things that I've noticed now living in a pretty rural community is there's just a lack of local news to a point where right now I'm in Talbot County, and there's a big backlash right now because it's just come to the attention to a lot of people in the county that there's a massive rezoning proposal with all sorts of changes to the zoning laws. And, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, you would know that because the local paper's reporter would sit in those dreary planning zoning meetings and looking for the interesting tidbits and write about it. And we don't have that now. And as a result, it feels like half the county had no idea that they were about to face all these restrictions. So, there's definitely a change, not for the better in that regard. At the same time, now that we have Facebook, this backlash is able to kind of come together a lot more quickly, and now it's getting coordinated. But it was really striking to see that this massive proposal was on the table for the county and the local paper never wrote about it.
How did you find out about the proposal, Christine?
I found out about it because we have chickens, and somebody said to me, have you seen the latest proposal that would put all these restrictions on having backyard chickens? And once I looked into that and realized that was the case and then started talking to a few folks, we realized it was part of this much, much broader proposal, a very dramatic change to all of the zoning in the county. And it seemed like everybody kind of realized it at the same time, probably because of social media.
Because of social media and, to some extent, hearsay, Josh.
Right. Right.
Any comment on that?
Well, I think the problem that Christine is talking about is really true, certainly all over Maryland, just about everywhere, where there's just been such a scale back of coverage, whether it's bigger papers just decimating their suburban bureaus or smaller papers, going away or dying back. And, I think there are a few different consequences. I mean, not only is it harder for residents to know what's going on in their local communities, but if you think about kind of the hostility toward the media generally, Christine mentioned, ordinarily you'd have a local reporter sitting through this hearing. Well, that local reporter is an ambassador for the publication he or she is working on, and in many cases is the only reporter a citizen will ever meet. And that kind of humanizes the media industry in a way that it doesn't now, and that's kind of going away, and there are consequences for that all over the place.
We're talking about local journalism solutions, inviting your calls at 800-433-8850. You can send us a tweet at Kojo Show, email to kojo@wamu.org, or go to our website, kojoshow.org. Join the conversation there. Do you already subscribe or donate to a local news outlet? If you don't, would you be willing to? How much would you be willing to pay to support local media? 800-433-8850. Jan, you fund journalism projects through an initiative called JLab. Where and how did that originate, and how does it work?
Well, JLab is a successor to the Pew Center for Civic Journalism, where we also funded civic journalism projects. And basically, I raised money to give it away to support startup media. In the last decade, that was a very big deal. Startups needed money for website development. Right now, it's easier to start up a news website because you don't have to pay for a customized website. You can use WordPress. There are many more tools that are free. So the cost of entry is low, and that your annual operating budget really isn't all that much. I mean, you can do a local news site on $250,000 a year, but even reaching that point is hard for a lot of these site founders who have to have many varied avenues of revenue to make a go of it.
How do you decide who gets funding?
Well, they submit applications, proposals. I have an advisory board that would vote on them. You get a lot of winners, and you get some losers, too. I mean, you get some people who don't deliver on the grants. But, you know, you're basically betting on the people.
Facebook recently announced several changes to its news feed, one of which is to show users more local news stories. Before we get to that, Jan, I wanted to ask how Facebook and other social media sites have affected the local news industry up till now.
Well, initially, I mean, it was a great distribution platform that Scott can attest to because it amplified whatever you were doing on your own site. That Facebook has changed its algorithms. It doesn't do that as much anymore. News entrepreneurs have to be a lot more creative in how they use it to get the word out about good content that they have. And the new plan now to promote local news is really challenged by the fact that I don't know that Facebook knows about the existence of things like Arlington Now and Reston Now as much, or members of the local news publishers association.
Well, they may know about them because they are probably have Facebook pages of their own. The question, I guess, is whether or not they can properly assess the journalism that they do.
Validate them, right, and decide that they're worthy of giving a megaphone to, basically.
Scott, as a publisher, do you have a sense of how Facebook affects your business?
Yeah, I think Facebook is both friend and foe to local publishers. On one hand, as Jan said, they do steer a lot of traffic to publishers like myself and other Lion members. On the other hand, since Facebook has come around, they've become sort of a homepage of the internet. And rather than people typing in arlnow.com or bookmarking our site, increasingly you see people who just go to Facebook and assume that the content will come to them. And so that makes it more challenging to get our all of our articles out to them. And sometimes they only see the articles that get the most likes. So something about county government might be a little less exciting, not get as much traction on Facebook, but a story about, you know, a new restaurant opening does. So it kind of controls the news they see. And the other thing that Facebook, I do find this their focus on local news encouraging, but as Jan said again, they have been very reticent to dive down into the very local level in publishers. We just, after years of trying, got our face verified, our Facebook page verified by Facebook. It took years for us to do that. So they're coming around. These are positive signs, but there are still some negatives of what Facebook is doing to the local business, and that's not even to mention on the business side of things and how they try to suck up as much advertising from local businesses as possible.
Well, you'll be pleased with what Amanda has to say. Amanda sent us a tweet that says that ARL Now is my favorite local news source. From new restaurants, community issues, and upcoming events, it makes Arlington feel much more small town.
Thank you, Amanda.
Got to take a short break. When we come back, we'll continue this conversation on local journalism solutions. I'm Kojo Nandi.
Hi, it's Diane. The next meeting of my book club is on Wednesday, May 31st at 1 p.m. Eastern. I'll host a discussion of Mad Honey by Jodi Picoult and Jennifer Finney Boylan, followed by a conversation with the authors. Find out more and register at dianereem.org/bookclub.
Welcome back. We're discussing local journalism solutions with Josh Kurtz. He's the co-founder and editor of Maryland Matters, a nonprofit news site that covers the state's government and politics. Scott Broadbeck is the founder and CEO of Local News Now, which operates ARL Now and Reston Now. And Jan Schaefer is the executive director of JLab, the Institute for Interactive Journalism. I did not get your take, Josh Kurtz, on Facebook. As far as Facebook's latest initiative to surface more local news, here's what Mark Zuckerberg wrote. People consistently tell us they want to see more local news on Facebook. Local news helps us understand the issues that matter in our communities and affect our lives. People who know what's happening around them are more likely to get involved and make a difference. It sounds good, but the announcement was met with some skepticism. What was your reaction?
Some optimism and some skepticism, too. Certainly, if Facebook is committed to that, that's going to help every local news provider. We're not quite sure how it's all going to work yet. I'd say within the last couple of weeks, I've actually seen Maryland Matters stuff more in my personal feed than I had, and I don't know if that's coincidence or not, but that's kind of interesting. And I'm sure Scott has gotten this, too, but we're occasionally encouraged to spend $3 to boost a post on our website.
I get that.
And, you know, $3 doesn't sound like a lot, but then they say, well, if you really want to make an impact, you have to do that every day. Then that adds up. And I'm not quite sure what that means and what we're getting for that investment.
We spend tens of thousands of dollars each year on Facebook ads, basically out of necessity.
Jen, along with boosting local news, Facebook is also reducing slightly the amount of news in our feeds. What difference might that make, if at all?
Well, I think they're trying to control the amount of fake news. I think the question for all of us journalists is, how will they determine? They don't want to make judgments about news. So how will they validate what is real news as opposed to fake news, or reality-based journalism as opposed to what is not? There are a lot of news deserts out there. A lot of local newspapers have paywalls that I'm not sure how Facebook proposes to penetrate. Some of those are hard paywalls. Some of those are a little leaky. You can get through. But I think it's a much more challenging proposition than Facebook has maybe indicated.
On to the telephones again. Here now is Susan in Herndon, Virginia. Susan, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Thank you, Kojo. My husband in the town of Herndon was on the town council twice. He is an immigrant from India, and he went to IIT. And he was confronted with something he had never expected in a democracy, especially because the representatives in the town were so-called Democrats. And what he found out was that the more he wanted transparency regarding immigration, local zoning, laws in the town of Herndon, the more they fought back. They kind of did this thing like it's for your own good, and the people really don't need all that information. And what they did is they wanted to end the openness of the minutes, the details of the town minutes. And it was, you could see everything eroding between the people and their government. And the more that he wanted it open, the more they fought back against him alone. So he opened up his own website, you know, HerndonOpinion.com, while he was a council member, so the people in the town of Herndon would know what was going on directly with their money. And thank you very much.
Well, is he still a council member?
No, he ran for mayor. And you know what they said, Kojo? Nobody from India can understand the West, though he went to IIT and he's been here since the 60s. And so people openly said, we like you as a council member. You're brilliant. You're wonderful. But we can't let you be in charge because you're not, you know,
well,
the right ethnicity and so on.
Is his website still up?
Yes, it is.
Oh, good. So people are still getting news about Herndon from him.
Well, he's getting ready for a second wind, I think. He got a lot of cultural growing up, I think. And he always thought that Democrats would embrace the values he had. You know, more Gandhi-ish thinking, kind of foolish, but he learned. So well, that's okay.
It seems like if the people of Herndon are also still learning from his website. So thank you very much for your call.
Thank you, Kojo. Bye-bye.
I want to get back to Facebook for a second here, because, Scott, what do you think of Facebook initiatives to push more local news? Have you seen any evidence of it yet? I have not on my page, to tell the truth.
I haven't noticed the our traffic coming from Facebook increasing significantly. I will say that they are, to some extent, putting their money where their mouth is. Lion, of which is a national organization for local independent online news publishers like myself, Facebook actually did contribute to Lion with a donation with no strings attached. So things like that are encouraging, but really, as local publishers, we need to be able to reach our audience. And if our audience is on Facebook, an inability to reach them is going to be very problematic for us. So that's the area that we're really looking for.
Jen, Facebook may be the gorilla in the room, but where else do people get news in social media, in the social media sphere? And how does local news fit in there?
Well, I think people are getting news in every way that a news entrepreneur can think of distributing it. So if it's not on Facebook, it might also be in an Instagram account, or it might be in an email newsletter that's delivered to you directly. And it's actually through events. I mean, news entrepreneurs think of events as journalism too, as you may meet face-to-face with your newsmaker or a legislator or council member or whatever. So all of these sort of contribute to ways that people get their news.
Where else do you know that people are getting their news from in social media, Scott?
You know, in areas like Herndon and in rural areas where there are where the local publication is not really fulfilling the need, you do see citizens going on forming their own Facebook groups as discussed. Right. And the problem with that, I think it's ultimately a good thing. I'm not going to come here and say it's bad. You know, as much as a professional publisher, I would love them coming to sites like ours. I'm not going to say it's totally a bad thing, but there is a risk there that we've seen happen with false information spreading. Because these are folks who are not doing this as a full-time job, who do not have necessarily are not approaching this from a journalistic standpoint. And sometimes these Facebook groups become mobs based off information that is not fully true, and that is challenging. You need a professional news organization to be able to go in there and really look into some of these things and provide a neutral, fact-based voice for what's going on.
We got an email from Lindsay who says, I never use Facebook if I can avoid it, certainly not as a news source. I have recently been using Nextdoor.com for local news. It's an excellent neighborhood-focused news source, including immediate neighborhood, city, and county information. And now we go to James in Hagerstown, Maryland. James, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Yes, my name's James, and I'm 66 years old. Never in my lifetime have I seen an attack on the news media that I've seen lately. It is just despicable. You know, it's unconstitutional to attack the news and say that these things are fake. And even when I watch TV at a gym, there's two TVs, and it's like watching two different realities. One's regular news, and then the other one's Fox News. And it's just a distortion of the news in the media. And this constant attack on the news saying that it's false and fake. I love newspapers because you can go from the front to the back within an instant and look
at. Well, I just read where the publisher of the New York Times, I think it was, says that print media will be gone in a decade, but we don't know about that for sure.
Well, not everybody have internet service. I don't have internet service. You know, it's like the world thinks that everybody has something, you know, and they don't. You know, and the newspaper is where I get my information. And like I say, there's so much attack on the news media.
I'm glad you brought that up, because I do not know the extent to which that has affected local news media in the same way that it has affected national news media. And I'd like to have our guests weigh in on that, but clearly you'd like to weigh in first.
could I just say that even my local newspaper here, they deleted Newsberry from the comic strip. I love the comic strips the most, and I love the political comics. But they deleted Newsberry. I went and talked to them about it, and I said they've been doing censorship.
Did you cancel your subscription?
Well, no. I go to the library and read the newspaper. You know, I'm not a rich person, but.
But you still continue to read it. Jan Schaefer, I'd like your take on this. Has the controversy surrounding the news media in general, in your view, affected local news outlets in the same way that it has clearly affected how people view national news outlets?
I think it's affected people's trust in media overall, and local news outlets that are doing bona fide journalism feel the brunt of that. But I also think there are surveys that show that people trust their local media and their local television stations more than the national news.
Speaking of local television stations, Diane in Beltsville, Maryland would like to address same. Diane, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Jojo. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can.
Great. I just had a comment. I think you guys are talking about paper, actual paper news, local paper news.
Well, local newspapers and websites, for that matter.
Well, I tell you, it was something that I found interesting over the years, which hardly anybody ever does. Your local channels for your county and your city and your state news, nobody ever watches that stuff. And it's full of a wealth of information, what the counties and everything are going, and you can watch them in session right there. I started doing that years ago in the various counties that I live. And I was amazed how much information I could get. And yet I found that nobody ever watches those stations.
Glad you brought that up. I say this a lot on this broadcast. I'm chairman of the Public Access Corporation of the District of Columbia, and I do hope you're wrong, that in fact a lot of people do in fact watch those channels, and there are some government-run challenge, county-run challenge channels in these neighborhoods. Josh Kurtz, is it your view that people do pay attention to those channels?
I think there's a committed core that definitely pays attention to those channels, and I think certainly in some of the area we cover, Montgomery, Prince George's, their local TV stations have, community stations have improved. And, these are huge counties that get almost no local coverage, and in some cases they're doing the best job of covering the local news, or the only real job of covering the local news, so they become more critical.
Jan Schaefer?
Yeah, Montgomery County has a million residents. I mean, and when you think that there's no newspaper that covers that, it's amazing. But I think the public access, I think it's MyMC Media, is doing now not just TV, but they're also putting out a daily website. I know Arlington's public access station is very, very active, very high quality, very good. Mm-hmm.
Scott, you've had success with ARL Now and Reston Now, and the site that you sold, Bethesda Now, seems to be doing very well under new ownership and its new name, Bethesda Beat.
Yes.
But you also had to shut down two sites that operated in the district, Hill Now and Borderstan. What happened there, and what are the challenges you see for sites like that?
Yeah, I mean, local news is very challenging. We've had a lot of success in Arlington and in Reston, but when we came into the district with sites, Hill Now was new, Borderstan was existing, but we took it over, bought it from its previous owners. We just were not able to get the traction with advertisers that we needed to. And if you're in local news, the real thing local news needs to survive is revenue, whether that's coming from subscribers or from advertisers, wherever. Without revenue, I can't pay our people. I can't provide their health insurance. I can't pay for the production of local news. And so that's what happened in D.C. And, you know, what I would say to the person concerned about the general rhetoric against news media in this country that's happening is try to channel it to productive use. Subscribe to sites like Josh. Become a member of WAMU. If you enjoy reading ARL Now, if you enjoy reading Popville or Reston Now, go support our advertisers, which are often local businesses. Tell them you saw their ad in ARL Now and you appreciate it. You have no idea how far that goes. That could be the difference between us being able to, hire someone or, struggling. So these are local news is a fragile thing, and the more support we can get from people, whether it be talking to our advertisers, don't hit the ad blocker when you come to the site, subscribe to a membership service. That is how you save local news, and you can do it in the comfort of your own home or smartphone.
In general terms, yes, but how about D.C. in particular? Do you think it'll be possible for another site to be successful in D.C.? What would that take?
There remains a lot of local news coverage in D.C. There's less than there once was, but Washingtonian, City Paper, doing great work. Popville, I'm biased, but I think Popville reports some great little tiny stories in communities that no one else is talking about. It's still there, but what we found was the district was a challenging environment for advertising. And my understanding is the reason that the City Paper was sold was because they were having challenges on their business side. So I hope Mark Ein, who bought it, will be able to turn that around. But it is a very challenging environment.
Very difficult to discuss the District of Columbia without the issue of race coming up. So here's Chris in Washington. Chris, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
I wanted to point out that a lot of this local press that we've seen, including, Border Stand. I mean, you talked about the advertisers. You talked about the writers. I mean, who are they writing to? We have to think about the audience here and why there wasn't such a fervor when a lot of these local publishers went down. There wasn't a huge cry out. Well, because I don't think the writers speak to the fact that half of D.C. is black. I mean, the writers aren't black. The advertisements aren't for black small businesses. They don't cover the issues, or if they do cover real estate issues, it's in favor of the overdevelopment crisis we're seeing and not concerned about gentrification and displacement. And so, you know, it's no wonder people didn't really throw their arms up and say, oh, no, Border Stand's leaving. You know what I'm saying?
But the Washington Informer newspaper is published out of Southeast Washington, and it caters to a predominantly African-American community. There's also Afro.com, which is now most based in Baltimore. And I don't think you can really accuse City Paper or Greater Washington of catering to developers, so to speak. A lot of their coverage has been highly critical of development in the Washington area. But as I said, it's hard to discuss news in Washington without the issue of race coming up, so it has. And we're going to continue the conversation. What kind of news outlets do you want to see? Would you like to see? Give us a call, 800-433-8850. We're going to take a short break, but you could also shoot us a tweet at Kojo Show or go to our website, kojoshow.org. Where do you get your local news? Has that changed over the past few years? I'm Kojo Nandi. Welcome back. We're talking about local journalism solutions and taking your calls at 800-433-8850. What do you think is missing from local news these days? How do you think it could be brought back? We're talking with Jan Schaefer. She's the executive director of JLAB, the Institute for Interactive Journalism. Scott Broadbeck is the founder and CEO of Local News Now, which operates ARL Now and Reston Now. And Josh Kurtz is the co-founder and editor of Maryland Matters, a nonprofit news site that covers the state's government and politics. Josh, nonprofit news outlets are not a brand new phenomenon, but it seems like there's a growing enthusiasm for the model. Here's what the editor of The Voice of San Diego, which has been a nonprofit for more than a decade, said recently. Quoting here, news organizations are starting to make the case directly that this is a valuable enterprise, that if you care about your community, you should invest in this. It just so happens that nonprofit news organizations are perfectly optimized for that. They don't have a shareholder or profit responsibility. They have a responsibility to a mission. Thinking of journalism as an educational resource is a better way to anchor what we do. End of quote. Josh, is that how you and your readers see Merlin Matters?
That's certainly how we're trying to sell ourselves. I would add that Voice of San Diego is one of the gold standards in the nonprofit journalism world. They do great work, and they've kind of figured out the funding formula. But absolutely, you know, we are always trying to drive home the point that we don't have to worry about making a profit, though we like to break even. You know, we're nonpartisan. We're independent, and you know, increasingly, you're finding that less and less at the state and local level. So that's absolutely part of our pitch.
Just how difficult is it to start a nonprofit news venture? Even though it's a nonprofit, you still have to bring in enough to pay for salaries,
right,
equipment, and overhead. Where does that come from?
Well, I mean, we've been shaking the tin cup, basically, and we have we've been lucky to get a couple of foundations have given us some money, which is fantastic. But the rest has just come from individuals, and you know, we're building our war chest, so to speak. But it's nowhere near where we'd like it to be. But we're depending on the kindness of strangers.
Why did you choose the nonprofit route?
Well, I looked into the possibility of becoming a subscription publication right away in Maryland, and I just didn't feel like there was enough critical mass to make it work financially. And I'd follow, you know, I'd research the models that Voice of San Diego and some other really excellent nonprofit publications around the country have succeeded with, and decided to try that route.
Here now is Paul in Washington, D.C. Paul, your turn.
Thanks, Kojo and guests, for an important conversation. In terms of local news sources, I do look to pick up The Informer, and when I'm over on the other side of the park, the Northwest Current, InTowner, The Blade. You know, I used to get DC North, but that's not going. So, you know, East of the River or whatever that family of publications are. There's a lot of ethnic and other sources for news in the District of Columbia, but it's shrinking and they're hard to find and get on a regular basis. You know, I'm also looking at reporting in places like ProPublica or neighborhood listservs, in addition to Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and those social media outlets. But what I would say is that on the issues that I work on that are affecting people's lives here in the District of Columbia, although
issues such as
Washington Post has, you know, reported on them, they back off of following up on the stories, and they've cut their staff, et cetera. So, I'm sorry.
What kind of specific issues are you working on?
So, the issue that I've been focused on over the last 13 years has been on water, and lead in water in particular. And residents have been finding high lead levels in schools, and have been looking at the lack of accountability of our D.C. City Council, our mayor, and the District Department of Energy and Environment and D.C. Water, without a lot of transparency or accountability or really knowledgeable reporting that's going on and information that people can use to protect their families and the community.
So what you're saying is that you would like to see more local reporting of that nature, and therefore more, I presume, local news outlets that are capable of doing that.
Yeah, and people that you can actually get in touch with and contact, and who you can develop relationships with that are ongoing over a period of time. And I know that's always a challenge because new staffs are changing over no matter what the model is. And the problem of having to really catch people up to speed and to be seen, that community voices are seen as trustworthy and worthy of coverage in addition to official voices.
All of those things may be true. The difficulty, however, these outlets are having is the difficulty of keeping their heads above water, the difficulties of staying afloat. So thank you very much for your call. Richard sent us an email saying, The Blade has been essential reading for LGBT folks for nearly 50 years. The staff barely missed a beat when the publisher shut it down in 2009. It was especially vital during the AIDS plague years when good information was hard to come by. Jan, as we said, you have helped fund many new ventures through JLab. What can you tell us about the difficulties and the rewards of starting up a local news venture these days?
It's usually difficult to sustain it because people don't understand. They may give you $60 a year as a membership fee, but you have to do that every year. And you have to keep reminding people to do it every year. So you always have to be kind of in their face. And then you have to figure out what your value proposition is. And you have to really provide the news and information that people need and welcome. And I think in terms of mission, you really have to decide whether you're just covering community or whether you're building community as well and what that means, not in a Pollyanna-ish way, but how will you be the steward of your community and what will people value about that?
We've gotten very used to getting our news online for free, but a recent New York Times column was headlined, "A Crazy Idea for Funding Local News. Charge people for it." National outlets seem to be having success with subscriptions. Could that also work for local news? After all, we're used to paywalls for newspapers like the New York Times or the Washington Post, the Wall Street Journal.
Right. Well, you have to ask people to pay. You have to tell them your story. If you look at a startup like ProPublica, they put out a fabulous annual report every year that really chronicles what they do. There's an idea floating around now for community information districts that would ask for public funding, much like for a water utility that would support some kind of local reporting on areas. So there are various ideas floating around that, you know, we'll see what gets traction. But I think the news entrepreneurs in the local arena, it's not about one revenue stream. It's about many micro revenue streams. That's how they're building their businesses.
How about a contributor or membership model along the lines of what we do in public media?
Well, that's the hot one at the moment now. Everybody's trying membership models, and the philanthropies have funded training to teach local entrepreneurs how to do this. And, you know, I think it has some promise.
Yeah. Scott, have you ever considered charging readers for your work?
Yeah. I mean, we have definitely been talking about it, and we probably are going to launch some sort of a membership product for ARL Now later this year. So we're still trying to figure out what's going to deliver the most value to readers and be different from what we're doing now, because we want to continue providing the coverage we're providing at the moment for free. I think there's something – certainly New York Times and Washington Post have had success with their paywall, and they have a great model. But those are national publications. The New York Times column referenced what are essentially trade publications online, which are function differently than a local news publication when you're asking people to use an expense account versus use their own money. I think it's important that local news remain free and accessible by all in some form or another. We might do a membership service where there's some exclusive content, but by and large, we're not serving democracy in the way we should be serving it if we're restricting information for those who are willing to or can pay for it.
How about you, Josh? Have you considered charging readers for your work?
Yeah, I mean,
it does clearly have value.
Yeah, we have looked into sort of setting up a membership too, and we're probably heading in that direction. We've also talked about sort of having two tiers of coverage, a lot of stuff free, but then kind of premium content that people might be willing to pay for behind a paywall. We're probably heading in that direction too.
We got a tweet from someone who said, "I feel lucky to live in Loudoun because we have Loudoun Now and the Loudoun Times Mirror. I have a Twitter alert set for both of them so that I can keep up to date." What role should citizen journalism play in the future of local news? We had the caller earlier whose husband was on the council and started his own web blog. How about blogs or outlets with a particular point of view?
Well, I mean, since the late 1990s, blogs have been the form of citizen journalism used most. But I think what's happened is that citizen journalism has come to be recast as citizens who take a video or a photo of an event, and then they call that journalism. It's not covering a city council meeting or a school board meeting at all. So I think what we've learned is that videos are easy for citizens to provide. Covering a school board meeting is hard work. It's hard journalistic work, and citizens, they're really not up to it. Most of them are not up to it unless they care about or are a public official and know about the community and how things work.
And a lot of citizen blogs are as interested in the opinion of the blogger as they are in the coverage of news. What do you think about citizen journalism, Scott?
I don't really have a problem with it. You go back as far as Ben Franklin, and you'll find publications that had points of view. What we're doing on our sites is we're trying to be a neutral, fact-based source. But I think blogs and opinions make for a stronger local news ecosystem. My site, DCist, came up in a time that was a bit more of a blog-centric time. And social media has since kind of culled the ranks of bloggers. I wish there were more bloggers. I wish there were more folks contributing their opinions, contributing their notes from local meetings. I think that would be a good thing.
Your take on citizen journalism, Josh?
I think there are a lot of smart, savvy bloggers out there. And in many cases, I value their opinions. I do worry about kind of the blurring in the readers' minds between what they do and what we do. And, you know, there are Scott was talking about this earlier, but there are higher standards for sort of what professional journalists do every day compared to what a blogger is, no matter how smart and how, you know, dedicated to telling the truth the blogger is. There's a difference.
And finally, what advice would you give to someone trying to start a new local news venture or revive one that is struggling? What sorts of things are going to save local journalism?
Well, I mean, the easy and flip answer is just to say, you know, find a sugar daddy as quickly as you can. But, basically, you know, if you love it, prepare to kind of bootstrap it and, you know, cast as wide a net as you can in terms of finding funding, because as everyone here has said today, you know, if you can't sustain it, it's not going to work. And that's the ultimate goal.
Same question to you, Jan.
I think there are some things you can do. There are a lot of media deserts out there around arts and culture, the built environment, schools. Cover what's not being covered. Partner and collaborate with whoever, public media. And tell the community your story. You can't assume that they know what you need. You have to tell them what you need.
And finally, you, Scott.
I would say to anybody starting out, you need passion and dedication in spades. This is a very hard business, and you need to really get up every day and relish the opportunity to inform your readers and to serve your advertisers or your subscribers. The other thing I would say is join Lion, join a group of publishers. We are out there, and we're looking to help each other succeed. This only gets better the more of us there are.
Well, they personify passion in spades. Jan Schaefer, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Joe.
Scott Brodbeck, thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Gojo.
Josh Kurtz, thank you for joining us.
Thanks so much.
That's it for the show today. You can learn more about today's shows online at kojoshow.org. Click on the page for this show for our favorite essays on the state of local news. You'll also find the first interview we did in 2018 with Washington City Paper's editor and its new owner. Join us back here tomorrow for our follow-up to our show about the Women's March anniversary. We'll check in with local conservative women to discuss their views on today's feminist and today's right-wing movements. Also tomorrow, a conversation with author George Saunders. His novel, Lincoln in the Bardo, was one of the most widely heralded books of last year. He joins us with the executive director of D.C.'s Lincoln Cottage to talk about crafting a story born out of Lincoln's personal tragedies and his time in the district. That's tomorrow at noon. Until then, thank you all for listening. I'm Kojo Nnamdi.
Thanks for listening to The Kojo Nnamdi Show, and if you're already a member of WAMU 88.5, thank you for your support. If not, it's easy to give online at wamu.org. Just click the donate button, and thanks.